When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Plus minus.
Curry, way downtown. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit there.
Plus minus.
Curry driving again. Good! Oh, you're kidding me!
Tell Marcus that he asked that question about my defense. Do you hear that, Marcus?
Anthony, you know me well, buddy. Y'all have a great night. I think he got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Hello and welcome to a morning edition of the Warriors Plus Minus podcast. I'm in Houston already. Tim Kawakami, I believe, is in the Bay Area still. Probably gearing up for Giants opening a home opener.
I'm all charged up. All charged up. So I'm very excited, as you know. You know, I was
yes.
At dinner last night. I was very excited about it. No. Slater, did you even stay for the game? I know you were like out of there. You were skedaddle out of that.
Yeah, because I had to get a Kevon Looney. I shouldn't even mention what I had to do. Warriors 104-100, which, by the way, I mean, I know this has been a theme of the NBA since really the All-Star break and, you know, the referee tweaks, we'll call them. But they've been really winning these, like, you know, older school final score games in this 5-game winning streak. You know,
that was a physical game, and I'm sure Steph Curry was not pleased with some of the physicality that was allowed. He was knocked around a little bit, but they were knocking around Luka. They were knocking around Kyrie. Like, this is the way the NBA is since the All-Star break. I was there for that Lakers game. It was a high scoring game, but that game in LA, that was the first time I started asking them about it. Like, yeah, this is going to be more physical, and I think the Warriors are kind of set up for it, other than obviously not pleased when Steph doesn't go to the line very much. But you want somebody who can play physical defense and be really effective is Draymond Green. They got the number one guy in the league and can do that still. And I think it's definitely tuned up their defense. I think they're, you know, kind of adjusting to it themselves, and they're playing better defense. They're playing like kind of scramble, you know, shove around, go for the ball, swipe at it, and then go head up the other way on the court. It's kind of suiting them.
Yeah, you know, again, 4 out of the last 5 games are either 100 or fewer. You know, I think it's 92, 93, 97 points for opponents, 100 yesterday against a good team. That was, by the way, the first 4 games of the streak were against bottom 10 offenses. Like, even the Magic and Heat were good teams. They do it on the defensive end. So this isn't some, you know, whatever you want to call it, 85 Bears type dominant from the Warriors. But there's just good signs within them.
They hadn't been doing it before, right? That's the point. Like, it's better than it was. And as Kurt pointed out, the Mavericks have been on a tough road thing here. You know, they've been playing really well. They're end of a road thing. The Warriors are going to have this going into the next couple games. I'm sure we'll talk about them. They're back-to-back at Houston, at Dallas. But as I always say, it's better to do good than to do poorly, right? you get the games you get. And they're winning them recently, and they're not winning them with offensive explosions, like another poor Steph shooting night, right? Another one. This happens, and they dug it out. No Kuminga. You know, there were reasons for the Warriors not to win this game against a good Mavericks team, even though we've pointed out that they were on a kind of tough road thing. The Warriors were just tougher. They pulled this one out, and it solidified them for the 10th place, and we'll talk about it. But Thursday really could basically clinch the 10th spot in the play, and now they can look to try to get to 9, right? Try to see if it's possible to get to 8. Like, these things are possible when you play well.
Yeah, let's talk about the defense. Draymond has 10 steals over the last 2 games. He obviously had that block last night that, I mean, Chris Paul to the TV broadcast called it one of the best plays he's ever seen. I do think there was a lot of people nudging, like, you know, wanting to highlight how brilliant they felt that play was. I mean, I guess I'm among them. That was the lead of my story, just looking at that play. I also think it's been a little, like, Draymond's had 15 to 20, yeah, like, more spectacular defensive plays in his career, like, just off the top of my head, really. But don't let me, you know, let that overshadow what has been an inspired two-game defensive surge from him that, you know, again, I don't want to, you know, oversell the idea of like, ooh, you know, the Orlando ejection was good for him, like good for the Warriors. You never want to do that. But, you know, sometimes these little pivot points with him can refocus him, can inspire him, can, you know, turn his engine hotter, which, you know, can be good and bad. I mean, you know, you know, with the argument on the bench, you don't even want to call it argument. He's just mad at the rookies for turnovers last night. Like, that's not necessarily the healthiest dynamic, but if he's going to fly around and be high energy Draymond, because, you know, we know low energy Draymond can be ineffective. He's been high energy lately, and that's been probably the heart of the defense. There are other factors, but that's number one.
Yeah, it's two things. Like, you know, what's Draymond's history is to do something that crosses the line and then make up for it. It's just what he does. The suspensions were really, really, really bad, about as bad as it could get for him. And then he was indefinitely suspended by the league. And then he comes back and he fuels this new lineup with Kuminga and Wiggins and gets them back into relevancy, gets ejected in Orlando, comes back and plays some of his, you know, most impassioned basketball in recent years, last few games, where, right when they needed it. I wrote about the Draymond timeout thing, sideline thing. He was, you know, banging on chairs. I don't know if the TV, you know, how much the TV picked up it, but it was pretty, pretty remarkable Draymond stuff. And I wrote down how Chris Paul was the player, the one player, you know, it was Anthony Vereen, assistant coach. It was Rick Celebrini for sure. Everyone else kind of steered away. Then it was Chris Paul walked right up to him because Draymond was coming out of the game at the end of the bench, and Chris Paul was the one in his ear. And they both talked about it after the game. It's important that Draymond has someone that with that kind of credibility. Andre Iguodala used to be that guy. Sean Livingston, to some extent. Didn't really have anybody last season. I mean, Andre really wasn't playing, and I think we saw some of the results of that.
I don't think the Jamichael Green partnership worked.
The Jamichael Green won that guy. I'll say, you know, I obviously wrote the column earlier this week saying, you know, this is why Draymond is still worth it. And after I wrote that, a member of the Warriors organization did, like, and you've heard this too, and you even wrote this from a Warriors person saying, like, what do you think he was going to ever get ejected again? The person who said to me was, like, if we expect Draymond to be at the brink all the time, which is him at his best, you can't ever think, in a non-ideal world that he won't go over the line sometimes. And getting ejected isn't the worst thing that's ever, I mean, it's not good. But Luka gets ejected. Guys get ejected. Like, you know Draymond's going to do that at times. You just don't want it to happen that often. And it wasn't the end of the world that it happened in Orlando if he turns around and plays great. And guess what? He turned around and played great.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
The big, big thing that the league really doesn't want him to do right now, and the Warriors can't afford him to do, is to hit somebody. You know what I mean? Suffer a flagrant foul that is suspension worthy and, like, career, you know, questioning worthy at this point. So that's the big thing. But, you know, there's other good stuff happening for them defensively. Andrew Wiggins was
fantastic. Fantastic game.
And it's been a pretty decent stretch of games for him overall. And then if you, like, really zoom out to his season, he has the horrible start, particularly offensively, deep slump that really, you know, impacts everything that went on in the first few months. But really, you know, after maybe like the first 6 weeks, which were a destructive 6 weeks that even at one point had him on the bench, right? Like, his numbers are okay. Like, the shooting numbers, I mean, like, maybe not the points per game productivity, but he's not as much asked to do that. Sure, like some of the energy on a night-to-night basis waxes and wanes. This isn't the All-Star 2022 version, the playoff version, but like I think you've got a reasonable version of Wiggins now for a relatively extended stretch. And then you do see what the top end is and how it transforms the team on games like last night, where it's 23 points. He kind of hit the dagger floater. And then, for you know, he guards Luka as really kind of as good as anybody in the league right now, at least historically, the way he guarded him in the West Finals. And it's not like he shut Luka down yesterday, but just picking him up full court, making him work, getting over screens, bothering Luka into like, really, I'd say bothering the Dallas offense in general, because it limited the others the way that Wiggins kind of took that assignment. He had a really nice block on him, too. I don't know, where you at on Wiggins? Like, you know, he's still, like, at his best, can be a two-way wing, making only $25 million a year. But then at his worst, you're like, oh, is this the worst contract in basketball?
Yeah, I go back and forth. I'm like, they should have traded him. Okay, wait a minute. It's good they didn't trade him. Back and forth on that one. I just think you can't assume he's going to be 2022 Wiggins. You just can't assume that's what he's going to be. Just lock him in, playoffs, that's who he is. You know, he didn't have a great game in San Antonio. He didn't close against San Antonio. Like, that's two games ago where he was not good enough. And I think Pajemski closed over him, if I remember correctly. Like, it's just that he's not that guy, but he can be valuable. And they've got other guys. That's the difference with this team is Moody, you know, can give them some minutes when he plays. And he's playing now because Kuminga's been out. When Kuminga comes back, you got Kuminga to do something. Like, Gary Payton II can do some of these things. Like, this is just a team that has some options, that isn't lost without one or two guys. And Wiggins gives it to them, they're really good, you know, or they're better than they've been. If Wiggins can't give it to them, they're not as good, but they've got other guys who can kind of jump.
You didn't even mention Moses Moody. Moses Moody started.
I did mention Moody. That was the first guy I mentioned.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, the first guy you mentioned, Moses Moody, actually started for him. Remember when he Wiggins missed the four games, and I think they were like 3-1 during that stretch. So, yeah, but, you know, Wiggins, two out of the last four games are probably two of his four best of the season, because you include last night and then the Orlando game. You know, they don't survive that Draymond ejection without, I think he finished with maybe 27, 12 in the fourth, you know, good most of that night. They were kind of running through the offense through him, as Steph said, post game. So, yeah, I would say he's on the upswing right now. We'll see if it continues. I mean, like, they desperately need it to continue. Otherwise, defensively, the other aspect that I find interesting and probably kind of planning on writing when it makes sense, and it might make sense over the next couple of days, is this like emerging front court question mark they have, which is they unlocked their season, as you mentioned, with Draymond at center and the Wiggins Kuminga combo, because it allows Kuminga to be a small ball four with a bunch of space out there. But now without Kuminga the last four games, as he's dealing with some knee tendonitis, they've gone to Trayce Jackson-Davis as the center, Draymond at the four. I think it's a defensive look that Draymond kind of prefers. As Steve Kerr mentioned last night, he's had Bogut in the past. He's had Looney. He likes having a bigger rebounder protector back there that allows him to roam at times. They can take fives for stretches. I mean, we know this. He likes being a four defensively a lot of times. And Trayce Jackson-Davis is just like, he's a good player, right? That's what we're learning over the last month or so. He can play 25, 30 minutes. He can start games. But you bring Kuminga back into the fold, and then you're talking about a lineup that's Kuminga at the three, which we've seen. He's been a much better small ball four than three in his career, just much better spacing. Then you have Draymond and Trayce. Like, there's not a lot of spacing there. And it's just interesting because Draymond's under contract for three more years. Trayce Jackson-Davis is under contract for three more years. Kuminga seems like a massive part of the future that's extension eligible. They're three of their most important players, and that's just, I want to see, they haven't tried it. Steve Kerr said it pregame last night. They haven't tried it much. They want to try it, but there's reasons to question whether those three on the floor at the same time can work, or if they're going to have to do some rotating combo of the two.
Yeah, I don't think that really works. I just don't see Kuminga as a three anymore. And, you know, Draymond's not a great shooting four, and Trayce is a non-shooting five. You really have some spacing issues when you put those three together. Now, you can do it at times. I'm not saying you can never do it. I think I'd just start Kuminga at the four, Draymond at the five. I think Draymond's the center. I mean, and I get that I do think that's what they're going to do. Yeah, I just don't. You know, you can play this for minutes, but I think you're not going to open or close with anything but Draymond at center, which they did. You know, they, as I keep grinding, they've done in their championship years. They close games with Draymond at center. It's what they've done. He guarded Wembanyama even when Trace Jackson was in the game with him. He's just that guy. And the spacing issues are what they are. And putting Kuminga in there with them would really exacerbate it. And then you do some minutes. You do some minutes with Trace and Draymond. But I would not have Kuminga in there if they did that. I think if you start Trace, you don't start Kuminga. So I would start Kuminga and not Trace, because I think you'd want Wiggins for the spacing. It's just like there's all these different pieces.
You
to
can
it.
Do Kuminga Trace combos too when Draymond sits. You can just kind of have a rotating.
Exactly.
Because to me, like, I think what's becoming clear, like, we know Kuminga now needs to be like a 30-plus minute guy, right? Draymond already is, obviously, and the different part of the equation now, I think, is like Trace kind of is becoming that. He's becoming more than, oh, you have Kuminga and Draymond, like, get Trace 12 backup center minutes and you're good. Like, he kind of like, you know, I don't know, what in the, you know, team pecking order right now, he's up to probably 7 or 6, right? In emerging, especially as you look at a franchise that needs to peer towards the future, that wants to, particularly from the decision-making process. And Trace is under contract for 3 more very cheap seasons after this. So they want to get him experience. They want to get him into a more major piece. And then that becomes, okay, then it's like, it's a very much a minutes puzzle that's hard to match.
Yeah, you can do it. I mean, you know, Looney's, you know, will not get minutes. He's getting minutes now because Kuminga's been out. But that just tells you, right? Kuminga's thought of as kind of as a big guy. He's not thought of as a small forward because they got a million small forwards they can play. Even when Kuminga's out, they just got guys who can play that. But Moody, GP2, Clay, Wiggins, they just got guys. Pajemski kind of plays like a small forward. Like they got stuff there. What they need is big guys. And again, Kuminga, Trace, Draymond, you just kind of see who's hot, see who's working. You can play that rotation. Looney plays whenever they need him. Those minutes you can find. Those are there. And, you know, one guy's going to be bad, you know, and Draymond's not playing 36 minutes a game, by the way, right? He's not. He's playing 28, 30, and which is opening up minutes for Trace. Like, these things all work. And that Chris Paul, you know, Trace, Pajemski, Moody, you know, last couple games, that second unit, Clay's been on it. That is an interesting second unit, right? It gives all the top guys rest, and you're not losing the minutes. They didn't, you know, they were matched up against Doncic for a little bit last night, and they did not lose, but they gained ground. So, like, there's combinations that will work. I think what I'm seeing more than anything is, like, there's just so many more options. Like, if one guy's not going, they can play somebody else at that spot. Kuminga can play over Draymond, or Trace can play over Draymond, or Draymond can play over Trace. Or, you know, it's, they've got these other lines that they can use where nobody, except for number 30, is, you know, just you can't play without none of them. There's nobody. I mean, would you say there's anybody that they go, oh, they're going to lose this game unless this guy plays well? And there's games when Steph's not playing well, which was last night, although he played really well on defense. I thought it was a really strong Steph defensive game. I think some of it was because he was so pissed off that his shot wasn't going, that he just went, okay, I'm going to have to take the ball away in order to help us win here. But they've got other guys. If it's not Pajemski, it could be Clay. If it's not Clay, it could be Moody. If it's not Moody, it could be, you know, they just go boom, 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 boom. Where they're not as great on the top as they used to be. They're not top heavy. They've just got this really vast middle where if Kerr can figure it out, if the right guy gets hot at the right time, they're probably, you know, a better team than last season, I'll say. I just think they have different ways to beat you. They may not get further in the playoffs, but I think they are kind of more varied, you know, team.
What's crazy, I mean, this is a whole commentary on the conference, but they're probably going to win either the same amount or more games this season. And that got them the 6th seed last year, 44, whereas it's probably getting them the 10 this year. It's happening with the Kings.
Yep.
The Kings are 3 wins away from last season. Let's say the Kings go 4-3 over the last 7, which is very reasonable that they will. They will actually have 49 wins, I believe, which is 1 more than last year, but they got the 3 seed last year.
Yep.
And they're going to be play in this year with like 49. So that's just, yeah, you could be a better team technically than last year and just in a much worse spot come playoff time.
Interesting. Yeah, and it shapes the way we look at the season. And you know, there's, I know, and we should look at it. The Warriors have blown a lot of things. You know, they've really screwed up a lot of games. So, our sense of their mediocrity through a lot of the season isn't unfair, but you're right. They could end up with 45 wins, you know, what are they going to end up with 46 wins? So like, this is not a terrible team and it's a deep team. Again, they could get knocked out and play in and it will look like a terrible failure season, and it will be, but it hasn't been like the depths that sometimes I think many of the fans have felt like, and maybe in the organization too, right? They have not been thrilled with the season, and there's reasons for them not to be thrilled.
The Draymond suspensions that sent them into a spiral. The you know, even that 1-3 stretch they had with the Chicago San Antonio losses when it felt like they were gaining rhythm. It's more like missed opportunity. They should be a 53-54 win team if they just like held up sturdier. Like it's more that than, oh, how poorly this thing is built.
Yep. You know, I agree. And you know, again, there's all these, like, Steph has been mostly healthy this season. Really? I mean, you know, there was that stretch when they go 1-3 when he hurt.
69 games later.
Yeah. I mean, this has been a healthy Steph season. So you could say, you know, you should do more when you have a healthy Steph like that. Then, and how many times are you going to get Steph to play 70 games? It's just, it's you know, everything is context for this. But you know that first half until they gave away all those the entire lead at the end of the second quarter was about as well as they can play. Like, that was a playoff level team that played the first half against the Mavericks. The rest was kind of a scramble. That's understood. You're just kind of grappling through this. But that was a clean, really well defended, you know, nice offensive performance out of them. When Steph isn't shooting the ball, they're still putting up points. You looked at that and go, well, you know what? Could this team not get two or three off the Nuggets in the playoffs? I don't mean, maybe they could. Could they scare the Timberwolves in the first round? Like, you know, you could see that. I'm not predicting that. The way the season has played out, it would be foolish to predict that. But you can see it. You can see why they don't think they're far away. It's just that the road they're going to be on, assuming they're not getting out of the play-in, and I think that's a pretty fair assumption, it's going to be really, really hard. But there are reasons to say there's some decent stuff here. I don't know what they're going to do in the offseason. It's not going to be to keep this same team together. We know that. There's going to be some moves, but you can see some interesting stuff with this team. You know, you can absolutely see interesting stuff. And how the, you know, do you think the Mavericks want to play them in a series later? Like, no way. The Mavericks would not want to play the Warriors. There's other teams that would say the same thing.
You did see the difference, though, last night in the Mavericks and Nuggets, because I was at halftime, I was having flashbacks to the Nuggets home game from how, you know, whatever, a month ago, where it would almost play out similarly, where the Warriors looked great the entire first half. And then the Nuggets went on a 14-0 run, I believe it was, to close the half and tie it. And it was just like, it felt like all this work was wiped away. And then the Nuggets just dominated in the second half. And what the Nuggets do to all teams is, when they get their closing lineup, which is their starting lineup out there, in the last 5 minutes, they just kill teams. They out-execute late. And that's where, you know, you talked about the path. Well, the path is really treacherous for them if they are in the 9-10 and if Denver clinches the one, which is, you know, it's basically a three-way tie up top right now. But if Denver finishes as the one and the Warriors do finish in the 9-10, like, that's too heavy of a path, I think.
You mean winning two road games and then getting on a flight and then playing Denver
36 hours later in the altitude?
Yeah, that would be, you think that would be rough? Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, that's how I go back to that. They lost the Lakers series not in, you know, game six. They lost Lakers series in having to go to game seven against the Kings, because then they had the quick turnaround. They lose game one at home to the Lakers, and that series was, the tone was set. Doesn't mean they would have beat the Lakers otherwise, but if they beat the Kings in game five, like they should have, no, game six, I'm sorry, at home, like they should have, they get 3 days off, four days off, and then they're rested to play the Lakers in game one. And this would not be that. This would be the entire opposite of that. You're going to play on the road, have to win, rest a day, fly, play on the road, win, rest a day, fly, and then you're going to have either the Nuggets, Timberwolves, or Thunder. And that will not be easy, but that's the path they've got. This is the conference they're in. And, you know, again, I think it would be interesting. I don't think some of those teams would want to play him, but that's not that doesn't set up in the games. It's going to be based on who's tired, who's healthy, who's, you know, all playing well, and it's going to be rough. Now, could they do a Heat thing? Heat had a similar thing. Like, yeah, sure, they could. But those don't happen very often, and there's a reason for it.
Two more things I wanted to discuss before we get out of here. Number one, I believe you wrote a Chris Paul article that will be up at some point on the website.
So pretty soon, I presume. Yep.
Summarize.
Just like the value of Chris Paul. I've been a guy talking about his value all season, and I know Warriors fans don't like him, but just that he was the guy that talked to Draymond and that they could communicate together. And Draymond allows, you know, himself to hear what Chris Paul has to say, that they feel a kinship, that, you know, that this is a guy with stature, that, you know, an Andre Iguodala type, Sean Livingston type. But, you know, we know even more talkative than that.
Can David West get some love here?
I didn't say David. I should add David West. I just thought of the other two guys first. I put them in the column. And was brought in here for a very specific basketball reason too. Like, just keep things balanced. It's the metaphorical, keep things balanced on the sideline, keep things balanced on the court when Steph's not in there, or even when you're with Steph. We know all the trouble they've had closing games. It's not that, like, you know, and Paul hasn't been in there for these, most of these giveaways. It's not that he's going to play every closing unit, but you can bring him in there. Like, okay, we can't turn it over here. Let's get Chris Paul in, which is what Kerr did at the end of the game last night. And with that second unit searching for hoops, they just haven't had that. Jordan Poole kind of could do that, but you knew you're going to get turnovers with that too. Kind of like keep it together guy. We know they made the Poole trade mostly to get rid of that contract, but it was also for basketball, that Chris Paul could be that extra punch, that different guy, you know, isn't the same movement, you know, space, all that kind of thing. He's going to play pick and roll. He's going to, you know, do some one-on-one stuff. And if that shot's falling, he ties everything together, and they don't have to be, you know, stressed during the non-Steph minutes. He was very good in them last night. He's been good, I think, you know, since he's come back from the hand injury. He shot the pen even before the hand injury. He was shooting the ball pretty well after a slow start. Like, this is important stuff, and they got him for this. This is what they got him for. They didn't get him for January. They didn't get him for, you know, February. They got him for right now, and I think they're feeling it. I think Draymond really feels it. And just I just thought that scene on the bench was important. I thought, you know, just his ability to adjust. And then Draymond said, like, they think he's been adjusting too much. Like, they didn't want adjusting Chris Paul. They wanted Chris Paul. And I think we're seeing some of that, you know, finding his shot, not deferring. You know, it's just been an interesting thing to see, and I think it's valuable. And you know me, I just didn't think Jordan Poole was the guy for that. You know, he was at times, and he was the anti that at times, and you just couldn't have the negative stuff on the floor and be a consistent team. And I think Paul is much more consistent, and doesn't mean that I think they're getting through the playoffs because of this. Doesn't mean I think he's winning games for them, but I'll just say when you're an opponent and you're looking, okay, Steph might win two games all by himself in a 7-game series. Klay might win one by himself. But wait a minute. Now we've got to deal with Draymond on defense and Chris Paul in the minutes where Steph's resting. And sometimes Chris Paul with Steph. That's an interesting lineup of things. Again, if they go up against Denver, I don't think they're going to win. If they go up against anybody in the top seeds, I don't think they're going to win. But the shot that they got is that these guys with depth behind them, with these younger guys who are playing well and are growing, which, again, we didn't see a lot of last season, this is a more balanced situation. Kind of been talking about it generally throughout this podcast. But, like, this Chris Paul does add stuff that is different. And I think it's important. I think we saw definitely stuff about it yesterday and have seen it throughout the season. And I think this is when it's really important. And he's still Chris Paul, damn it. He's still that guy for less minutes than usual. And you were there when I asked him, maybe not in the most eloquent way, like, because you're playing less minutes, you think you might be fresher at the end of the season. He was not, as you were there, so he was not buying any part of that presumption, because Chris Paul does not want to play limited minutes, period. But I think he will be fresher. Like, he's played like 600 fewer minutes than last season. Like, this is important at age 38 and going to be turning 39 in May. Like, this is a point guards usually don't go this far playing well, and certainly not 6'1" point guards. Like, this is a guy who might be fresh. I thought he looked really fresh last night. I don't think he looked fresh against Antonio. Like, there's times he's not going to look fresh. These guys, they're older.
But, well, yeah, I mean, he got his pocket pick like twice on the road.
He did not like bringing the ball up against some of those guys. And listen, he's still 38. Doesn't mean he's not who he used to be. But in the limited minutes, fresher legs, I think he's a factor. I think he's a factor in a way. Some, you know, no backup point guard, maybe since Sean Livingston, the beginning of the run, really has been. And Paul is a factor in other ways. So we shall see. But I do think it's a significant thing to note. And the respect level that he's got in there is important. And really, since Iguodala stopped playing, has been missing. They have not had that voice. And Andre could be that voice, but it doesn't matter as much when he's not playing, you know, when he's in a suit. Chris Paul's out there on the court, seeing the same things, playing with Pajemski and Trace when Draymond gets pissed at him and can say, Draymond, just tell me what you're mad about and I'll talk to them. Like, that's stuff Andre used to do, and they have been missing it. And he's given it to him, and he's been pretty good on the floor.
To lean into the brand of our podcast, I will defend the legacy of Jordan Poole.
go.
And say he was a massive factor in the 2022 playoffs, and really the 2022 season as a backup point guard. That is a level of just dynamism from the backup point guard slot that they hadn't had and haven't had. But he did not bring that last season, and he certainly didn't bring the calming influence of Draymond Green behind the scenes.
No, he did not do that. He did not do that.
The thing I'll say with Paul, I think his scoring really matters. And, you know, you mentioned the question you asked to Chris Paul. He generally tries to shoot down any indications of, like, he couldn't be 32-year-old Chris Paul anymore at this, you know, stage with minutes, but also with scoring. And I asked him something about his jumper last night, why he was more aggressive with it. And he basically just indicated, oh, it's Dallas scheme a little bit, and it's just game script, 2-for-1s, so he shot a few more. But you mentioned the freshness. He was bouncing around. I think when he's doing that, he's hitting that fadeaway a lot better.
Yep.
And, you know, I remember the game in Dallas when they played the same Dallas team. Steph did not play in that game. Chris Paul had a lot of mid-rangers, a lot of opportunities to take jumpers, which he either turned down or missed in that game. And I do think they could really use a hot and semi-aggressive Chris Paul scoring over the next, you know, month and a half. It's something that they don't necessarily count on. And at this stage of Chris Paul's career, it's unwise. He's not just going to run a heavy dose of pick and roll and call his own number. But, I mean, you saw it last night. Like, when the big stretch of the game, that late third quarter to mid-fourth without Steph, where they were a big positive, a lot of that was like just Chris Paul hit jumpers.
Yep.
And
go find them. He's got to go find them, yeah. Right? I mean, yeah. Not even like it's not catch and shoot at all. It's dribble through, and then lean back and shoot it up in the air and hope it goes in. So, and they need it. You know, that's not a group that can go find shots. And, you know, it's not going to be great every time, but it's important. Those were huge hoops last night, no question.
Last thing, you know, you kind of talked about the standings earlier. I just wanted to kind of wrap up with where they are at. You know, they're 3 up on the Rockets. This is a really poorly timed 2-game losing streak for Houston. They've gone before this big head-to-head that, you know, I'm sure Toyota Center is going to be fired up about tomorrow. They've dropped 2, and that's put them 3 back without the tiebreaker. So basically 4 back, 7 games to go. Warriors win tomorrow. It's basically a 5-game lead with 6 games to go. It's over, you know. Even if they win, it's a large uphill battle for the Rockets. I still expect, just because there's a positive vibe around this late season run by Houston and the way Jalen Green is playing and the way some of their younger, smaller lineups are doing, I do expect a very tough environment for the Warriors to win tomorrow, but they are now like heavy, heavy favorites, regardless of result tomorrow, to be at least the 10th seed. They're 1.5 behind the Lakers, but play in LA next week with a chance to win the tiebreaker. So 9 is obtainable. Suns Kings are 3 ahead in the loss column, and the Warriors do not have the tiebreaker against either. So that seems still like very faint, the idea of getting all the way up to 8. But not impossible, because Suns have a really challenging schedule and the Kings are just injured right now, and they're about to go out east for a few tough games. So that is where things stand.
Man, that Kings game where the Warriors blew that lead, Slater, how big is that right now? Like, that is so big.
Yeah.
Because they would really have a shot at passing them, I think, if they had won that game. Because they'd have the tiebreaker, right? Yeah. And they'd have one game. So huge. You know, games matter. Every single game matters. This is the way I'm thinking. Like, if the Warriors, obviously the Warriors win tomorrow, they're going to at least be in the play-in. I think they would have to lose both tomorrow and the back-to-back in Dallas, which is a really hard game, right? You just beat them. They're a good team. They're going to be rested. You're not going to be. If they lose both, then I think 10 is really in play. But they'd have to lose both. And Houston would have to keep winning. It's like, you know, we're just not assuming Houston's going to win everything. And if they win both, and again, this would be tough for the Warriors, but if they win both, then I think 9's right there for them. Like, it's really a swing, 9, 10, and 11 swing, these two games, just because of who they're against, the positioning against those, the teams they're competing with. Like these two games could get the Warriors to 8 if everything falls right. It would make 11 possible. Both things are right in play with these two games, more so than any two games that have been on their schedule.
Yeah, and at the same time that's happening, the Kings are traveling east, remaking their rotation now that Monk and Herder are out, and they're about to play on the same nights, a back-to-back, at Knicks, at Celtics.
Yep. Kings are there. Like, you know, that's possible. But again, if the Warriors had just won that game in Sacramento that they gave away, I would say they could be looking at 8, but they didn't. This is the way that goes. But I think Houston's going to be really tough tomorrow. You know, that's just like they played a good game in Minnesota. And Minnesota, as we know, is good. And Jalen Green, like, they could not guard Jalen Green. Like, he was missing shots, but they could not guard him. This is going to be interesting, the way the Warriors play it. The energy that Houston, they're lively. They are a lengthy, live team. And we know those kinds of teams have been tough on the Warriors. Thompson and Whitmore, and like, they just, like, you're watching them, they just got all these springy long
guys. They got Tillman Fertitta is probably gonna grab the mic pregame.
You love Tillman.
This is our season. Well, you know, Ethan Strauss is no longer on the podcast, so I have to give him the occasional.
You have to fill it in. No, it's gonna be a mini playoff game, or even more than a mini. It's gonna be like a playoff game. Just because, you're right. Houston has not been this position. They're a rising team. They're going to feel it. Let's see how the Warriors respond. Warriors have tended to respond very well in those kind of games over the years. So we shall see. I think Jalen Green's been special. You know, I mean, we've all seen the stats. It's just been amazing. The guy can get a shot. Like, you talk about a guy who can get his shot whenever he wants it. That's him. And he's playing it with efficiency these days. It'll be something for the Warriors to deal with. I guess Wiggins will guard him, but and they're going to have to put GP2 on him some. They're going to, you know, they're going to have to put a lot of different guys on him. It's one part of where the Warriors are. It's like, you know, they got to swing some defensive guys in there, because it's not like you're going to want to put Steph on him. You're not going to want to put Clay on him. You're not going to necessarily want to put Pajemski on him. Like they're going to have to do some things to guard spectacular offensive players that they didn't have to worry a ton about in the past, just because Clay could guard them or Andre could guard them, and they don't have those guys. But, you know, they have different ways they can attack you.
You know who else will add to the proceedings? Dylan Brooks is a...
Yes. Draymond is going to be revved up for this one. And we know Dylan Brooks might want to cause a little bit more agitation. But Dylan Brooks could get agitated himself and get tossed too, right? He's like this is the give and take. We shall watch it and we shall see. But it's a fun game. It is, just given the differences in the teams, given Ime Udoka versus Steve Kerr again, given a lot of the comedy. Fred VanVleet has beat them in big games, I seem to recall, Slater.
Yes.
Like, this is a fun game with a lot of different characters in them.
All right. Well, we will talk to you. Maybe we'll do like a little post-game live room, especially if it's a good game. Yep. We'll talk at some point in between or after this Texas back-to-back.
All good. And well, if I'm not consumed by baseball at the time, as you know.
Oh, no. That's going to be a big one. Who do the Giants even play?
I think it's the Padres. That's like somebody asked me yesterday. Like, I think it's the Padres. I'm not 100% sure. I'll be there, but I can't always remember who they're playing. I'm just fixated on baseball, as you know. Just obsessed.
Well, there you go. We will talk to you down the line.
Yeah.